Powered by Rep Media in partnership with TSN, it is episode 24 of season 5 of the Rain Dregs Hockey Podcast, presented by our title sponsor, Canadian Club Whiskey, who have introduced the first release of the Canadian Club Invitation Series. CC 15-year-old Sherry Cask, and Ray, you and I can both confirm 100% it's delicious.
Well, yes, for sure. I told you, Landon and I had gotten into it on the weekend. And
just a wee nip.
Yeah, my older son, Matt, came in with his family last night, which is why I'm in a new place, because his family's taken over the downstairs area. And so we had quickly got a little zapper just to give a little sample.
Beautiful.
And thumbs up from Matt, too, who's an aficionado of it. So, yeah. It's awesome. It's really a great drink. It is.
It is. CC 15-year-old Sherry Cask, all the hallmarks of classic Canadian Club with the added richness and sweetness of sherry. So the family is all come into the compound in the Vancouver area. It is now, isn't it? Right? You've got everybody involved, which is fantastic. That's, for me, where the holidays start to feel like the holidays. And in your case, in Cammie's case, you've got the grandkids now nearby. So are you done your Christmas shopping, Ray? Or have you even started your Christmas shopping?
No, I'm Amazon's really a big help. So you don't have to get anywhere. But I'm in New York for starting Monday till Friday. I got 3 games next week. Got 3 Oiler games in New York. They go through the Islanders, Devils, Rangers swinging. So I got a day off there. So I think that's probably my will be the day off plan. Knock off. I hear they've got shopping there. So I'll probably clean up the rest of it there. How about you?
I'm pretty much done. But very similar approach. We did the Seattle Board of Governors trip, didn't do any shopping there. But then I had a few hours in Ottawa. We stayed at the Westin in Ottawa, so you're attached to the mall. Zipped over there and picked up a few items. And as far as the kids, Katie and Mason, had that looked after long ago. So I'm as in good shape right now as I've been years, feeling good about it. Christmas could be tomorrow. I'd be sick.
Yeah, it couldn't be tomorrow. There'd be some loose ends here.
All right, lots to talk about in headlines. Headlines brought to us by Tim Hortons, where their holiday merchandise is now available. Speaking of shopping, how about a snowy Timbits Night 500-piece puzzle? I love the holiday puzzles. Or the new limited edition Tim Hortons Winter Blend Fine Grind Coffee. Or if you like hot chocolate, and you like hot chocolate.
I love hot chocolate.
How about the Candy Cane Hot Chocolate Mix? Only at Tim's. Good stuff. What? Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the 500-piece puzzle thing. I didn't picture you as a puzzle guy, but I got to tell you, my mom loved them. My dad she'd have these big, massive puzzles. My dad would always take one or two pieces and hide them.
Which is a dirty trick. It's fun, but it's
and then right when nasty. She'd get near the end, he'd walk in and go, oh, and he'd put the two pieces in and go, there you go, finished another one.
That's outstanding. So I'm not a puzzle guy. My family is my mom, my brother, my sister. They love it. My kids love it. Holly will sit down for hours and build this thing. The only time I get involved is when the outline, the outside of the puzzle has been built. That frustrates the crap out of me, right? Like you're looking for that one piece because it feels like once you get the outside in place, poof, then it just all comes alive for you. So
there you go. I like the outside. I'll do that. You can finish the other 375 pieces.
Yeah. All right. Check it out, the Snowy Timbits Night 500-piece puzzle. Tough news this week, and we've got Jamie Rivers, who's an analyst for the St. Louis Blues, who will join us here in episode 24 to talk about that tough news, the firing of a very popular coach in Craig Berube in St. Louis. And you could see, Ray, in the face of Doug Armstrong, the general manager, as he met the media. It's never a good thing. You never want to fire your coach. Because you, as a manager, feel responsibility for why you're in that position. But as Jamie, I'm sure, will take us through the process, it just looked going into that. I talked about it on an insider trading on Tuesday prior to that game against Detroit, which ultimately led to the firing of Craig Berube. And I hate doing this as an insider, predicting that the coach is going to be fired. But that had a feel to it early on Tuesday. But that being said, it's part of the business, both for management and everyone involved. I don't think Craig Berube is going to be out there on the unemployment line as long as he wants to be. And that may not be very long, right?
Yeah. It's funny, you know, like I'm not as dialed in, right? You know, you're checking with your sources all the time. It felt like a surprise to me. And the reason it did was that they were going to be the type of team that was this year that was going to be around, you know, the 500 mark. I don't know that there was any great expectation that they were going to be, you know, near the top of their division or anything. And so with that comes good and bad. And here they are, they're in kind of the middle ground, you know, like they're a team in transition a little bit. And oftentimes the coach, you know, isn't the right guy at the right time because it's the transition time. Like, I don't think anybody can be really the right guy when a team's into the transition part. Like there's just too much up and down. The other thing that must be tough is the, you know, they won a Stanley Cup together. There is a loyalty and a familiarity and maybe a thought of, gee, we're not that far because we've done this before. And that I would think would be really difficult for a GM, and certainly Armstrong and Berube go back to when they fired the coach and Berube came in, they were in last place and then they won the cup in 2019. And you know, that it didn't seem possible then. And he was the guy that got it done. Terrific guy.
Really good guy.
And I would say maybe from appearances as misunderstood a coach as there is. Because all you got to do is flick on YouTube and you see what he was all about when he played. Like that was a frightening man. And he's really soft-spoken. He's like, he's got time for people. You watch him around the rink. He's got time for people. He stops. And the other thing is, if you shake his hand, it's like putting your hand in a bear trap. I mean, his hands are, you know, like he just, I don't know, everything that I remember him as a player is not the way he is as a coach. Right. It just isn't.
No. I mean, I reached out to him after the firing and, you know, you're not going to get into deep conversation. He just wants to go away, you know, not hide, but just go away and enjoy the time away, enjoy the rest, recharge. He's built the coach, so he will coach again. He just told me via text message, look, I want to lay low for a while. And that's the messaging I take from that, is that he just, and this is commonplace, right? Coaches, when they've been with a club or they've been coaching for consecutive years for a long time, all of a sudden you're not coaching and it's a full shift in life, but you embrace it for a period of time, whether that's a short period or a long period. Yet here we are, Ottawa is playing the St. Louis Blues and almost immediately I'm getting text messages, you know, early Wednesday morning, I was going to say late Tuesday night. Ooh, geez, do you think that Berube would be a good fit in Ottawa? You know, I mean, DJ has been kicked in the shins, in the midsection, in the head. Like, I mean, this guy is still the head coach of the Ottawa Senators, yet we can't deny the possibility given everything that Ottawa has been through.
No, you can't. And all the time you're evaluating your coach, I think teams do it all the time. And somebody pops on the market that's interesting and it might make you think of your coach a little bit differently. That, you know, when you were talking about a coach or about Craig wanting to lay low for a bit, I immediately thought of when John Tortorella was let go in New York and he came to Vancouver immediately.
Yeah.
And really what John needed was a refresh, a time away, just let it go for a little bit, because he came here and it was not good. Mm-hmm. And then he went away, and the change in his demeanor, the change in his energy now coaching in Philadelphia, that part of that was the time away. And I think it's got to be almost impossible to go from one team to another with very little time in between and try and, you know, and try and shift gears and new players and new city and, you know, and you're still reeling from the other place. I think it would be really hard.
Yeah. I mean, you could appreciate, you know, if things get to a place where Steve Staios and Michael Andlauer decide it is time, not suggesting that that's the way they're leaning. If I'm any coach, I'm looking at that Sens roster and going, okay, You know, they're inconsistent right now, but I'm catching this club on the uptick here, so may not be a bad idea. What were your thoughts? You were in Edmonton on Tuesday for the clash of the Connors. What a goal by Bedard to get that game rolling. Now it ends up in favor of McDavid and the Oilers, but as advertised, fun to watch, fun to be a part of as a broadcaster.
Yeah. A couple things. The goal was exceptional. I mean, like there's not many players that are going to score that goal in the league, and the kid's 18 years old, right? Mm-hmm. Like I got caught on it. I was babbling away about some brilliant point.
You and others.
And then all of a sudden this pass comes from Alex Vlasic, like 100 feet through the neutral zone, boom, he's in. Like it happened so fast. I also felt it was going to be going into the game. It was a bit of an unfair fight. And that's what it turned out to be. I mean, like the Oilers are too good for the Blackhawks. Yeah. The third thing would be, it's really fun for us. The Connorverse, they were calling it at ESPN. And we were, you know, the whole show was around the two Connors. And the one fella there, the McDavid fella, was going to make sure that everybody, I mean, you can just see the competitiveness. It's like Gretz had it. Like, okay, we're here to see the young guy, but yeah, I'm right over here. And he took the puck a couple times and did some things that just other people can't do. It just electrifying to watch him play. And the Oilers are rolling. I mean, I think they're a forward short. You know, like when I look at them, they're, you know, Connor Brown's playing with Draisaitl. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have any goals. He's got zero.
Yeah.
And that can't stay. Right. Like that, you know, right. So it feels like they're a forward short. The McDavid and Nugent Hopkins line is just rolling right now. The, you know, Zach Hyman's got, I think, 16 goals. It was a cool stat. He's got 16 goals and their average distance is 8 feet. That's so great. I love that. So, but I think the Oilers they're going to run some wins here. One other point on that is Chris Knobloch had a pretty cool thing he was telling us at pregame. Was when he took over, there was exactly 64 games left. So he broke it down for the players in eight game segments. And he said, look, if we go 5-3 in each eight game segment, we're going to be close. We're going to be good. Mm-hmm. And they just went through the first eight game segment, 8-0.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody was expecting that, but he said what his thought was that the players believe 5-3 is possible all the time. Like if you're telling them you got to go 7-1, seven segments in a row, they know that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But this was believable and they look like they're really dialed in.
So as a player, do you like that sort of feedback and that sort of direction? I mean, it's not unusual that coaches break down the regular season in segments, 5 games, 10 games, whatever it is.
Right. No, I like it because the totality of the season, it's so long. Like, I think you can get lost in the forest there.
Yeah.
And he basically was saying, look, let's worry about 8 games. And we get through 8 games, we'll play 8 more. And I really do like that. One other guy got to mention there because we talked about him earlier in the year as being totally lost in his game was Evan Bouchard.
Yeah.
Looks completely different. He's on 11 game point streak.
So funny.
It's really strange. Like same guy, right?
Yeah.
But now he made a pass on the first Oiler goal. It was just beautiful breakout pass, like crisp and one pass out of the zone and. You know, they were gone. It was really impressive. Now he's 11 game point streak. The team record's 28 for a defenseman. That's Paul Coffey. So he's probably safe.
Good luck, Evan.
Yeah, good luck.
Okay. I want to talk World Juniors with you before we wrap up headlines. But first, you know, just because of the Kyle Connor extended injury and the fact that he's, you know, he's on LTI, he's going to be out for probably a minimum of 6 weeks with that MCL strain. News better than it might have been, because that was a nasty collision with Ryan Strome. But Gabe Vilardi returns to Los Angeles for his first game against his former club, the Kings. And it's weird because we kind of talked about this on Tuesday, right? Playing against your former team, whether you're juiced for that sort of thing. Well, obviously Vilardi, you know, whether you had an axe to grind, you just wanted to show that, okay, I'm going to elevate my game because our top scorer isn't in the lineup. A 4-point night for Velarde in what was an impressive win by Winnipeg over the LA Kings.
Yeah, LA hasn't lost very much this year, and certainly you know, on the road they've been almost unstoppable. They think just one loss on the road. Pretty cool to go back and have a big night. Like, you know, Velarde was out too. He just got back pretty recently, and same type of injury as Connor had, and you know, he had first round pick. It had all kinds of back issues, and you know, he finally got healthy and broke out last year, and then he gets, you know, moved in this deal. And so you want to, I don't know, you want to feel like you're a big part of the new team too. And this is, that would have been a great night for him. Really would have.
Yeah. All right. Wrapping up headlines with this. So we mentioned Chicago and Connor Bedard earlier. We know that Bedard, Adam Fantilli, Shane Wright, they're not going to be loaned to Canada's World Junior team. It's highly unlikely that Benson is also loaned by the Buffalo Sabres. I mean, the guy plays power play. He's on their penalty kill. He's playing with Tuck and Thompson. I mean, he's a pretty integral piece. I want to say the same about Matthew Potra with the Boston Bruins. Highly unlikely. But Hockey Canada did leave a spot open. They only named 12 forwards. So I guess they're hoping that either Buffalo or Boston releases their guys or one of those players, or I guess worst case, you invite another CHL player at some point in the next week over to Sweden. They just aren't flying with the group. What would you do, Ray? I mean, if you're Boston, are you letting Matty Potter go?
I'm not. It's funny. I'm not looking at the total arc of Potra's stay in Boston. I'm looking at the last couple of weeks.
Right.
And then I have to make an evaluation. I think, are we going to play him a lot? You know, he got benched the other night. He got taken out of the rotation a little bit. And yes, it is to be expected. And I think they're beyond thrilled with him. But if you don't think over the next few weeks that he's going to play a lot, then maybe it's the best place to go and play. The problem is they're not deep up the middle anyway.
They're not.
And so you could say, hey, it would be best for him to go play 17, 18 minutes with the junior team. However, it's not like he's the type of player that's going to go there like Bedard did last year and average 2 points a game. And, you know, like there's also a lot of downside to an NHL age or an NHL playing junior aged player going back to junior. Agreed. And so the balance to it, I think they keep him because I can't think of who they would just move into the middle for 3 weeks.
No.
Right. Like, you know, like it's not like they got an extra centerman hanging around. And, and then I do think his game is NHL set. I do. I think they're really realistic about what production they can get from him at his age. I don't think they're thinking all of a sudden, geez, he's a 65 point guy. You know, I mean, he's just getting going.
Yeah. And I mean, he was almost 15 minutes in the overtime loss to the New Jersey Devils last night. You know, 50%.
They kind of go up and down with him, eh? Like, you know,
they do.
I think Jim Montgomery's got a decent feel. Well, not decent, a really good feel to, oh, he's got it tonight. Oh, he doesn't have it tonight. And and that's just part of the journey.
Yeah. Those are your headlines. Thank you to Tim Hortons. Our interviews on Ray and Dregs are brought to us by Canadian Club Whiskey, who have introduced the first release of the Canadian Club Invitation Series, the delicious CC 15-year-old Sherry Cass Signature CC Classic 12-year-old whiskey, finished with a secondary aging in Oloroso Sherry casks. All right. Happy to be joined on the Ray and Dregs Hockey Podcast by Jamie Rivers, who's an analyst with the St. Louis Blues. And honestly, Jamie, we wish that we were having you as a guest on the podcast under better circumstances, but tough news on Tuesday night following the loss to Detroit. General manager Doug Armstrong fired a very popular coach in Craig Berube. Now, generally, we had a sense that something was coming. There was some form of change, but you're around this team every single day. Could you see the coaching change? Was it imminent?
You know, I honestly didn't see the coaching change being imminent. Yeah, I think it's always lying in the background because in the hockey world, we understand that teams that don't win hockey games are the coaches obviously susceptible to being fired or there's going to be a change of some kind or a trade that's happening. I didn't get that vibe for a couple of reasons. One is because preseason, Doug Armstrong had said, I hope this team can be third in the division. I think it's a playoff team. I'd like for this team to be in the middle third of the league. And when you look at right now, the Blues are, I think, 1 point out of the playoffs right now, out of a wild card spot.
Yeah.
They're kind of in that middle third of the league. So you're thinking, okay, this is kind of what Army expected. So why would there be a change? But it comes down to Army was watching the team play and he said the results didn't matter to him. He said they were winning games that they shouldn't win and they were losing games that, you know, clearly they were not a part of in any way. And he just didn't like the way the team looked as they were playing, not so much the record. And I think that's the biggest thing. And that's in the eye of the beholder as well, right? He's the general manager. He's the president of hockey operations. If he says he doesn't like the look of it, that's all that matters.
How much of this do you think, Jamie, lands at? I mean, it always lands at the feet of the players, I guess, at some point, as it should. They're the guys that are playing. But when you look, you know, Doug Armstrong had signed Robert Thomas and Jordan Kyrou to like big, long extensions, 8 years, I think 8.125 each per year. And Kyrou's got 5 goals. How much of this sits at, you know, at a certain point, the coach has got to find a way for the guy to play. The guy's got to find a way to play. They haven't found a way, and maybe someone new can find a way to play because they're locked in for these guys for a long time.
Yeah, there's a large commitment to these young guys, and you know they're a huge part of this hockey club. I'll say this about Craig Berube is, you know, he gets labeled sometimes as a guy that likes just the big, heavy players, the grinder, right, chip it and chase. That's not the case. He's not that way at all. He understands that each player has a way of playing the game and that he's going to let them be creative and be free with the puck. But on the flip side of that, you got to be responsible and you got to compete. And that's the one thing that I think that if anybody in St. Louis, whether you're a fan or a player or anybody that watches the team, the one word that's come up consistently during Craig Berube's tenure here was compete. He just wants guys to get out there and play hard. And I think that at times there was a struggle to get that from certain dynamic players that, as you know, Ray and Drags, you know this too, like dynamic guys aren't really 200-foot players.
No.
It's too far. If they sprinkle it into their game every now and then, like that's a luxury to have.
Yeah.
So, and I don't think Chief was of the belief that he was going to create these, you know, Ryan O'Reilly-esque robots that could play offense, defense, and be great guys in the locker room. But there was a sense that, you know, maybe he wasn't getting enough out of some of these young guys. But I go back to what you said, Ray. I think it falls on the players because if you look at the last two seasons, both Kyrou and Thomas have been like point of game guys that you kind of can like circle that is, okay, this is what the production's going to be. Now, Robert Thomas has had a good start to this season in the points category. Jordan Kyrou, not so much. But the root of it, guys, is the power play. Like the power play is 31st in the league. I think they're 7 for like 85 or something on the season. They've had more shorthanded goals than they do power play goals.
Yeah.
And if you're looking at some of these games that were one goal games that were ties where you could have taken the lead, maybe you could have extended the lead and you didn't score a power play goal. I think that's the, I think that ultimately was the coach killer, was that you couldn't perform on the special teams.
I guess when I look at the Blues, you know, I think of their Stanley Cup team and it's really not that long ago, of course. And like, they were so big and heavy and mean and, you know, gradually those pieces slip away, you know, Petrangelo being, of course, the biggest piece of it all. And you just can't really replace somebody like that. And so, or at least in my opinion, you can't. But I look at the team, Jamie, you're watching all the time. It's like they don't have that, like you could stick something to the Blues and say they are this team. Like they're not a physical team. They're not a fast team. They're not a skilled team or enough of it that you could tag one thing to it. And I just wondered, like, St. Louis seemed to really connect the city to a big, heavy team. And it seems like it's kind of all over the place right now a little bit. And that's what it feels like watching them play. Do you sense that? Like, guys are, they're a little confused or maybe not all in and what they need to be?
Yeah, I would agree. I've called it a tweener roster. Like you're kind of in between all of the different categories, to where you've got, you know, some size, you got a little bit of heaviness out there. Then you've got, you know, some speed, some skill. It's kind of a little bit of, you know, all aspects of the game. And I think that's part of the problem. And I think, you know, Doug Armstrong, you know, he realized that yesterday, or he admitted yesterday that, look, this is his roster. He put it together. You know, he believes in the players, but ultimately he still understands that at the end of the day, he's the guy who signed all of these contracts, you know, whether it was the coaches, the players, the trainers, like he's the head guy, the head honcho in all this. And so he, you know, he's got to, you know, accept a little bit of that responsibility. But yeah, you're right. You know, like last year in particular as well, there were pockets of time where this team wanted to be a heavy team, get it in down low, cycle the puck, do what they did in 2019 and kind of bulldog teams, but you didn't have the personnel. And then the flip side of that is then you tried to run and gun it and tried to lead the league in rush chances last year, or you're one of the top three teams in the league, but you didn't have enough horses to play the rush game. So I think for Army, the biggest project over the next year to 2 years is identifying what he thinks the future of this team looks like, right, and then making sure the roster emulates that.
All right. So as we record with Jamie Rivers here on the Rain Dregs podcast, the Blues will host the Ottawa Senators tonight on Thursday. Mm-hmm. Now, Doug Armstrong, as general manager, reached the milestone of 1,000 games back in October. Mm-hmm. There was a pregame ceremony that has been scheduled for tonight, and news came out last night or yesterday that they postponed this pregame ceremony indefinitely. It's not a coincidence, right? This is just simply because of the timing of firing Craig Berube, and it just doesn't feel right.
Yeah, I think, look, first of all, Army's not a guy who likes a lot of attention.
No. Wouldn't he have hated that, Jamie, like to walk out there and actually have to give a speed? He'd hate that.
He would hate
like,
it. You know,
brutal.
Working between the benches, being right down there, I actually was kind of looking forward to seeing the awkwardness of all of it because Army hates it so much. So to any of the listeners who don't know Army all that well, like he likes to lurk in the shadows and the hallways, the back alleyways. Like he does not like to be the center of attention.
No. Right.
So that happening, first of all, was probably uncomfortable. And now let's be honest. There has been a lot of backlash here in the last 24 hours. Like the city of St. Louis, man, they wrapped their arms around Craig Berube.
Yeah.
Like this is a blue collar city. People work hard for what they have and they fight for what they have. And you get a guy like Craig Berube, who's your head coach, who's the ultimate warrior.
Yeah.
And he comes in and wins you a Stanley Cup. Like this guy doesn't have to buy a drink for life here in St. Louis. And now you've got, you know, the general manager, the guy who fired him, being celebrated. I think it's probably pretty smart that they delay this. You know, how long, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, Doug is certainly deserving of the honor, absolutely. But I think, yeah, let's work on the timing a little.
When I heard about that there was going to be a ceremony, I thought, this is going to be the shortest speech ever. Like, he's going to go out there, go, thanks, turn around, shake a hand, and leave. You guys aren't even going to have to change the open of the broadcast.
Vamp, boys, vamp.
Hey, by the way, how is the deal? We got our little buddy Panger moved on to Chicago, and you've stepped in very capably and entertainingly to take over that spot. How are you enjoying it?
I love it, man. I do. You know, I've been fortunate enough to work for about 10 years now with Fox Sports Midwest and Bally Sports Midwest at the pre and post. And the last couple of years coming out of the bullpen for, you know, Panger when he's done some TNT stuff. And so getting the call this summer and getting the opportunity to do it has been awesome. I mean, you guys know, like,
yeah,
you travel around with the team, you're back in the league, you're in the rink every day, you're talking to guys, your former teammates that you played with are now general managers and coaches, and it's awesome, man. I'm really enjoying it. And I get to work with John Kelly. Yeah. Now, John Kelly's such a good dude. He's quiet and whatnot, but he's a total pro. And that's the thing. Like, anytime I feel like I'm in the weeds on something or, how did that sound? Like, he's like, no, you're fine. You know, don't worry about it. Just go. Just be
that's
you.
A pretty good
just
imitation.
Yeah, I know, John. What are you worried about? Just be you. Go ahead. Talk.
Hey, I got it. Because I got sent a few notes on this. I'm sure you have too. So you're standing down there and, Rob Ray gets hit right between the eyes.
Like right between the eyes.
So, you know how it is. You should never say anything.
Well, you couldn't miss that pumpkin. That's for sure.
Well, I wasn't going to say, but you could almost. I said to somebody, where exactly did he get hit? Because when they put that tape on it, it's like dead center. And so I've got whacked a few times, and you're like, oh my God, that hurts so much. Because like, I'm old. I'm like, I don't want to get hit anymore. have you taken anything down there? Any shrapnel yet?
Not yet. There's been a few pucks that have buzzed the tower in there, which is kind of unnerving because like you're in this glass box and it just rattles around in there until it decides to stop moving. So that's kind of difficult to figure out where the hell the puck's ultimately going to end up. But I'm pretty savvy so far. Like, you know, Ray, like you've watched and played the game for so long. Like, you know, when guys are on a crash course for your area, I'm turning my back and I'm not really, I'm just hoping and I'm waiting for the whack on the back of the head or whatever.
It's not a place for bravery, eh?
At that point, I'm not digging in my heels and being like, yeah, let's go. And I'm like, no, just don't hit me, please. I don't have the same insurance I used to as a player.
Yeah, good point. One of the great lines I heard, Noodles, Jamie McLennan was down there and a puck got rattled in there and he was kind of looking around a bit, and Gord Miller says, I'm just watching the game. And Gord says, Jamie, it's the puck's behind you there. He goes, like, I haven't heard that before. It was so quick and so fast. It was funny.
We had a broadcast in Chicago just a couple of weeks ago, and it was the first time that Panger was, you know, we were playing against Panger's team. Yeah. And, you know, obviously, great friendships there. Panger's in between the benches, and John Kelly had just finished dropping a holy jumping on a goal just for in honor of Panger, you know, does a holy jumping, that whole thing.
Yeah.
And moments later, the camera is like on Panger. It's like, oh, that's our good buddy, Darren Pang. And the puck fires in there and just misses Panger, just misses him. And, you know, we're talking about it. And then I go, well, John, don't worry. I said, that'd be the only puck that hit Panger in this building.
How about now? Were you weren't working downstairs with them?
No. So we go home games are down between the benches, and then away games, you know, we're up in the booth because the home team reserves the right to have the between the benches thing. So I get a little bit of mix of both views from up top or down low.
Okay. Last thing about the Blues here. I'll switch back just really quickly. What Drew Bannister's the interim coach? Does it feel like he's there as an interim coach? Does it feel like they're going to run this for a while, or do you have a sense of that?
For me, the sense I got initially was that this is strictly interim.
Yeah.
Now, as the press conference went on, Army did, you know, expand his thoughts a little bit and say that there's a possibility. Like if Drew comes in here and he is just the right guy, we'll know it. And at that point, you know, we'll talk about giving him the job. But as of right now, he's like, we called him up interim basis. The search has begun.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'm the guy coming in. There's two ways to look at it. There's one way to look at it and say, okay, well, I'm the placeholder because they're literally talking about who's going to replace me down the road. Or you say, screw that. I'm a good coach. I'm going to come in there and work my butt off and show them that I belong here and change his mind. Mm. So we'll see what, you know, which way Drew Bannister kind of goes with it. I get the sense that he wants to come in and take hold of this and not let go.
Oh, yeah.
He's worked extremely hard in the OHL and the AHL. I played against him for what, 3 or 4 years in junior and obviously in the NHL too. He wants it, man.
Yeah.
He wants it bad. So, you know, hopefully he's able to right the ship here and, you know, another young guy getting an opportunity would be great.
Yeah. Very structured, detailed guy. He's certainly going to get the players' attention. Jamie, thanks for taking the time to do this on a game day. It's always a challenge, as Ray knows. Here's to better times ahead in St. Louis, and to you and your family, happy holidays.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot for having me on. I appreciate it. Happy holidays to you guys, too.
All the best, Jamie. Thank you.
Thanks, Ray.
You know, tough situation for everyone associated with the St. Louis Blues, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, hey, Jamie Rivers has a job to do, and I think he gave us a pretty good read on where he feels the Blues are, what led to Doug Armstrong's decision to fire Berube, but just how difficult that had to have been given the presence that Craig Berube will always have in St. Louis.
Yeah, you know, there's sometimes when a coach gets fired, the players have had enough of the coach. The coach has had enough of the players.
Yeah.
You know, like you can, and if you're in that arena, you can just feel it. And I don't get the sense that was the case there. So it makes the firing that much more difficult, you know, but they have seemed, you know, I mentioned they, you know, they're a little skilled. They're a little, they're like a lot of different things with no real identity. Mm-hmm. And it feels flat or stale a little bit. And sometimes your only option really is to change the coach. I mean, like you're not moved. We talk about it all the time. You just can't move a quarter of your roster and change things. It just, it's impossible. It just, you can't do it. So this might be really your only option.
Yeah. Well, thanks to Jamie Rivers again for joining us on the podcast. Ask Randregs anything. Fire your questions to us via Twitter, Instagram, at Randregs, or on the website, randregs.com. And by the way, if you're interested in joining us, investing, becoming a sponsor of the terrific Randregs Hockey Podcast, drop us a note, randregspodcast@gmail.com. All right, one question, because, you know, we had Jamie Rivers on, we had an extended version of headlines, chop chop. We got to get with it here on this Thursday, right? Will Meinen or Meinen. Ray, what is the most penalty minutes you earned in a game? And then he follows up, Dregs, what's the most penalty-filled game you've seen? So you go first. Most penalty minutes you took in a game.
For me, I don't know, but I would guess 14. And the 14? Reason I'm saying, yeah, the reason I'm saying 14 would have been two slashing penalties and a misconduct.
Okay. And do you remember who were the slashing penalties against?
No, but I would, the misconduct seems like that would have been part of that equation. Yeah. What my most embarrassing misconduct was, something happened. I go back to the bench and it was during a line change and I'm yelling at the ref who's in the far corner. He's in the far corner of the rink and I'm yelling at him and all of a sudden he slaps the 10 on me. I got to get up, open the door, skate across the ice and go sit down for 10 minutes. Oh man, that was a shameful skate, man. Just shut
so
up.
So a combination of anger and embarrassment, I assume.
And I think each stride I took, I became less angry and more embarrassed.
Yeah. So it wasn't as much of a slow boil for 10 minutes in the penalty box. It was just kind of regrouping.
Try and disappear. Because as you can imagine, the coach is really happy to have you back on the bench when you come back they've had to play half a period without you. You know, you're like, you dummy.
So Will Fall, it's a two-part question. He asked, what's the most penalty-filled game that I've seen? And instantly, for whatever reason, because we've all seen lots of penalty-filled games over the years, my mind went to 2004. And you remember that brawl between the Ottawa Senators and the Philadelphia Flyers. And I recollect Marty Havlat like whacking Mark Recchi over the head with his stick. Right. And then you had Donald Brashear and we talked about Rob Ray taking one between the eyes earlier in the podcast. They had Brashear and Ray going
so
at it.
So tough, those guys.
And then the goalies, right? Like Robert Esch, Patrick Laleem. And then the third period, who did Spezza fight? Like, I want to say Sharp, Patrick Sharp.
Wasn't Ray Emery? Was that the brawl Ray Emery was in?
Or was that the Buffalo one with Marty Biron?
That was Marty. Jeez. Ray Emery. Marty,
But
was
I think
a tough man.
That 2004 tilt between the Sens and look, I'll be corrected on social media, between the Sens and the Flyers, I think that was where the NHL said, okay, last 5 minutes of the game, we're not doing this anymore. You instigate a fight in the last 5 minutes and you get the one game suspension. I think it came out of that 2004 debacle.
Okay, there's two that I remember. One was Anaheim and Calgary.
Yeah.
And Berube was in this game.
Of course he was.
But at some point, I forget what Calgary had done, but there was like about 6 minutes left.
Yeah.
And Kevin Sawyer, who's a buddy of mine, flipped the puck in on the Calgary goal and just ran right over the goal. He didn't even stop. And as he turned in the corner, he had his gloves and stick off, and he was ready to fight. Well, at some point, there was only a few players left, And Calgary, I want to say it was Berube that was in the penalty box. Calgary flipped the puck over the glass on purpose so they could get this guy out of the box so he could fight somebody. It was like mayhem. That's one of them. And there's an old one, and I encourage people that are enthusiasts of this. It's an old Boston, Minnesota one. And it's John Wensink, who was a really tough guy. At some point in this fight that's going on, that's now spread to two and three fights on the ice, he goes over to the Minnesota bench and challenges the whole bench. He kind of half bows.
Of course he did. Yeah.
And spreads his arms like anybody. And he, you know, gives them the come on. And nobody on Minnesota gets off the bench. And so Wensink just kind of throws his hands in disgust at them. I want to say there was over 300 penalty minutes that night. Like, thankfully, the game is in a lot different place than that stuff.
So, man. See, that's why I felt like I had to include at least one question and ask Grant Riggs anything, because Will hit it out of the park with this one. Again, if you're interested in joining us here on the Rain Riggs podcast via sponsorship, just drop us a line. Send us an email, rainriggspodcast@gmail.com. What's the weekend look like for you, Ray?
Family. Canucks in Florida tonight at home. And then as I mentioned, my oldest son, Matt, and his family's in town, which is great. Landon and his wife, who's getting to the point where she's due almost any day, which is really exciting. And then we got little guys today, by the way, December the 14th is my son Reese's 14th birthday.
Happy birthday, Reese.
And as you know, when they grow, you know, all of a sudden, like, oh, 14. And here's one of the cool things that happened. So Matt came down and he brought a whole bunch of stuff out of storage that I haven't seen in 30 years. Now, I put this out on Twitter, but if you're watching, that is my first goal puck. It looks like it was dragged behind a truck from trail.
Who chewed on it? It's got pieces missing.
That was a Whaler breakout on the power play, I think, that chipped up the power or the puck. How about this? It says first NHL goal, December 22nd, 1984, 3:49 of the third period on the power play versus Doug Sotart, 10-5 loss. We lost 10-5.
That was an important part of the plaque in the first, like, you had to you know put the 10-5 loss on there, right?
I'm going to mention a little detail, two details about that the listeners have heard before. Was I was on for a whole bunch of game goals that night. Yeah, I had four points, goal and three assists, and I was on for a whole boatload of goals against. But Greg Millen was in for all 10 of those goals. Hey, Millsy, it's the black thing. Get in front of one, would you? 10.
Oh, boy. He should have pulled the Patrick Waugh, right, and just gave eyeball to the president. At the time,
Form, and the form was going to fall over. They were so happy in there. Hey, another goal.
That's outstanding. That's terrific. All right, buddy. Well, enjoy your weekend. Not much going on. We've got Katie Dreger writes her final law exam, tomorrow being Friday. Final.
Best of luck.
Third year of
Best
law
Best of luck,
school.
Katie.
Best of luck to Katie. Well, I shouldn't say final. She's got to get through the third year, and then there's a bar exam that I hear is pretty tough as well. So she's got to do that. So
all the best to her. Hope it goes well.
She's coming in tomorrow night, as a matter of fact, and then zipping off to Florida for a much earned week of R&R. So
good for her.
So that's what we got.
So enjoy your weekend, Dregs, and everybody. Yeah. Thanks for listening. Eh? We'll talk to you next week.
You bet. Thank you to our sponsors, Canadian Club Whiskey, our title sponsor, and of course, Tim Hortons. And as always, thank you for rating, for listening, for sharing, and for checking us out on the Rain Riggs YouTube channel as well. Until next time, stay safe and happy holidays, everybody.